Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding. Now, before we begin today's show, I just want to remind you that once you've had a chance to check out our program, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Now, that helps you stay up to date on the latest content from us and helps us get the word out to others and let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Gerard Jones, Director of Coaching, an author, and U.S. Soccer Federation grassroots instructor. Welcome to the program today.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be great.
Well, basically, what we're looking forward in this show is talking to our grassroots coaches, which is the probably the most plentiful area of coaches that we have here in the United States, and especially here in the state of West Virginia. Grassroots coaches from the under sixes to the under eights, 12s, just a plethora of coaches out there. Some of them have some experience, some of them don't. They may or may not know the sport that well. And since you are an instructor with the United States Soccer Federation, I figured you'd be the perfect person to talk to about this on the show. Why don't you go ahead and start by giving our coaches just a little bit of understanding of what the U.S. Soccer grassroots coaching courses are all about.
Well, thanks, obviously, Amy, because it's a pleasure to talk about this, because it's something that's really central to my passion. And the biggest thing with US soccer, what we're going through now, is you're seeing a massive culture shift. And I'm fortunate to only just come onto that wave now, because I've seen some of the previous philosophies within US soccer. And I know that there's always been that history and tradition where they've been running courses alongside what is now United Soccer Coaches. Previously, as you'll know, the NSCAA, the National Soccer Coaches Association of America. And I think in the past, there tended to be a shift between, you know, coaches wanting to do maybe perhaps other courses as opposed to the USSF. That's my opinion. But I think what we've seen now is that within US soccer, there's a very clear philosophy around developing the individual, the learner. And it's very, very, very simple, because it's based across various principles that are holistic, reality-based, and experiential. And that's something that exists right across our player development philosophy, as well as our coach education philosophy. So when a grassroots coach comes onto a course, they're going to see something that's all about them, maximizing their wants and needs, trying to give them an opportunity where they're seeing the game and it's reality-based, and they get to have an opportunity now on the courses to physically coach real players, so players that are of the age-appropriate level and stage and format of the game. So if they attend a 4v4 license, 7v7, 9v9, or 11v11, they can do these courses in the correct age and stage and format of the game that they may be working in or they may want to explore more interest in. And from that, and there's two pathways you can do now, which is unbelievable, because, again, we know that the adult learners want everything on their time. They want clear, unambiguous information that's accessible at any time, because we've got busy lives. So what US Soccer has done now is that they've created the online platform, which is great for e-learning. And you can now complete these grassroots courses, the first one being the Introduction to Grassroots Coaching, which is a free online module, takes around 20 minutes on average. And you can do that for free through the what is now the Learning Center through US Soccer, and that's learning.ussoccer.com. And that'll allow you to do is go onto any, as you know, any 4v4, 77, 99, 11, 11 course in person or online. The online courses are 2 hours. You can do it in the comfort of your own home, and you can do them. And then the in-person courses are 4 hours, and you get so much rich detail and knowledge. And you get to, you know, on the in-person courses, you're interacting with other coaches that are trying to discover this as well. Some have got varying levels of experience and they've worked at different levels, but it's a great environment. you know, to share ideas and pick people's brains and challenge and probe. And that's effectively what we're doing now at US Soccer. And we're trying to put the emphasis back on the learner. And then from that, the in-person courses, if there's a further interest, you can continue on the grassroots pathway to what is the national D license course, which is what I tutor on. To get onto that, you must have completed three courses, two in person across any of the formats. One can be online, one of which must be 11v11, which is in person. And that will allow you to meet the prerequisites for the D license, unless you're a coach who's previously done the E license. If you've done the E license, then if you've done the introduction to grassroots coaching, you can then graduate straight onto the D. And as I emphasize about the learner, the player is at the center of this philosophy. So it's so important for anyone listening to this that it's not about us, it's not about me. It's about the central focus being that the player, who is the actor in this game, them developing their individual traits, what's going to maximize their strength, how are we going to allow them to operate in their own genius. And at US Soccer, the big thing that we're looking for is through play, because as you know, and we'll probably go into more detail throughout the podcast, play is one of the natural forms of learning that has ever existed, and kids have been doing it since the dawn of time. And what the game is defined by so many variables, as you know, and the people know, but if we look at the constants and the variables of the game, what exists in every game of soccer? What defines soccer? What makes soccer unique? Why do kids play the game? You know, if you look at Amanda Vizek, fun maps, and what the kids describe as fun, and which is, you know, scrimmaging in games, playing more games, having touches on the ball, having a coach that gives them challenges, gives them questions, asks them questions, set some problems to solve, not giving them the answer, not joysticking. These are all the things that the kids have come up with themselves. And effectively, what's central to all this philosophy and experience and empirical research is that we're seeing now that the kids aren't playing as much as they did before, as we know. So we're trying to find ways to recreate the street game. And we know that the game offers a lot because that's effectively what we need to implement. We need to implement actions in a game scenario, which is the reality base. And we need to give them an opportunity to experiment and solve problems for themselves. So versus going towards drills and versus towards constant practices that in some places, some people may believe have merit, what we're trying to do is we're trying to maximize the time. So for a grassroots coach who might not know anything about soccer, they should be able to come up and go, right, how do kids make decisions? Well, kids make decisions based on perception, decision, and execution. So perception being, what do they take on board? What information do they see, feel, hear? Once they're doing that, then they're processing that information, which is the decision part, and then they're executing it. And our job is not to short-circuit that decision-making process. It's to actually allow the kids to not go from perception straight to execution, which is often what joysticking and default coaching is. We just tell them the answer. We say, hey, run here or spread out. We tell them what to do. They don't know why they're doing it, but they do it. The challenge is asking them, hey, where could you stand now? When Billy has the ball now, how will that affect you? Where can you run? What happens when you do now all of a sudden? Or you can say, can you show me or try to do? Now we're setting them a challenge and we're giving them the freedom to experiment within that challenge and make and form their own decisions, because that's the game. And the game is built upon cues, triggers and habits. So the cues is, as I mentioned, the perception part. What information are you giving me? So if we're 1v1, where are you? Where's the space? The trigger is my execution, which I mentioned to you. And the habit is that behavior formed over time. And we want to allow for errors. We want to give the opportunity for the players where they can make their own decisions on time and space and number limitations. And that through play. So it's creating game-like experiences where the kids can make a technical action in a game-like opportunity. And that's the key, and that's where we're going. So everything, as I've just said now, it's all about the learner and them forming and making their own decisions, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You hit on a number of great points in just talking there. Want to delve into those a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
You talk about the The one thing I see a lot of, unfortunately, is I see a lot of joysticking from the coaches at the especially at the grassroots level. And you talk about the fact that they need that these players need an opportunity to be creative, need an opportunity to make mistakes. And I think that's a huge portion, is that as a grassroots coach, that we need to allow them to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. But at the same time, these coaches are kind of also dealing with on the same side, especially from an American culture of winning.
Yes. Yeah.
And talk to us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know what? You've hit the nail on the head, because I coach at the grassroots level. I've worked at every level, from professional, league, college, high school, in the UK, academy coach, head of academy coaching, lead academy coach. I've seen players go on to the international level, and I'm now working at the grassroots level where I've worked for many years. And the most important role, which often gets neglected, everyone thinks, you know, the glamour is winning and the glamour, you know, having a badge on your chest. The most important coaches are the grassroots coaches, because that's where the journey begins. And we've got a real danger here, because the danger being that if we put too much pressure on the child, and we forget that it's the children, they're not mini adults. We're not trying to get to premature professionalism. There's such a mad rush. There's so many ways I can answer this conversation, but I'm coaching now a U10 boys grassroots team, right?
Right.
And on Sunday, I'm having players playing different positions, because that's part of our philosophy. They need to develop the game. I'm ensuring that the kids are getting equal playing time, and they're all playing minimum 50%. Versus the coach who is playing against me in the league, he's left the same players, maybe perhaps his perceived best players, on the field. He's got kids on the bench that still haven't come off, that are sat on the bench for long periods of time. He hasn't quite changed the substituting pattern or what he's doing. And he's obviously going to win. Now, the way we're trying to set the problems, and you're seeing coaches go, shoot it. Parents are doing this as well. Not in the middle, pass, whatever. And they're saying all these things. They're taking away choice from the players. And by emphasizing on the win, yes, winning is important, but winning with style is more important. Kids can learn through winning. There's no question of that. You develop confidence. But as we say at the Federation, you can actually learn a lot through losing. And I think what's important for any grassroots coach listening is, this isn't the World Cup. This, you know, there's not millions of dollars on the line.
Right.
But we have to try and make sure that these kids have an opportunity to play. Because, and when I started the word with that danger word, and I emphasised the word, we've noticed that population, in terms of participation for soccer in the United States in particular, it's been stagnant for the last 10 to 15 years. Well, that's a problem. The numbers show that it's been stagnant. And the numbers have also shown that there's a dropout. So you see the dropouts at U13, U14, U15. We're actually, and I just came across a research study last week, I think it was, a 2019 study, that showed that there's kids dropping out as early as U10.
Wow.
U10. So the reason why is because, and you've got these leagues where they go elite, rec, under 8 players, you know, and it's like, what? And you see these people who are advertising and they're doing tryouts, and that's the culture. The culture in the United States is, for most of the great stuff about it, it's got a lot of trade-offs which are bad. It's emphasis on the team. So what's the first thing any coach will tell you, or the club will advertise on their website, how many state championships they've won?
Yep.
It's not how many individuals have gone on and done great. So how many and this is what the biggest question any grassroots coach listening, or any coach in general, should be thinking is, what is your definition of success? Because we're not working with a child who's, you know, we're working with a child who's not an adult. That's the best way I can explain it. They're a child. We've got to see, yeah, where do we want them to be when they're 21, 22, whatever. But we're working with a child who's in the early part of their career. And we have to ensure that we develop that child with the love that we want to keep them playing the sport. Not that if it's too much pressure, or little Jimmy who's frozen like yesterday against the coach I'm playing against, and that kid doesn't play, that kid might never touch the ball again. We don't know. But that kid could have been the next Pulisic. We don't know.
Right.
And the other thing is that these kids can also find, as you and I both know, another pathway. you know, because they could become sports scientists, they could become teachers, they could become coaches themselves. You know, they might not go on and play college, they might not want to, but the life skills, the soft skills that are really important now more than ever, as we're in this world of VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous, you know, information's accessible at any point, any time. The kids today are going through a world now where it's more volatile than ever. You know, they've got so much communication, you've got cyberbullying, you've got people's opinions of you instantly accessed. They're growing up in this technological world, right?
Right.
And the kids today are doing all the games and they're playing on video games and that's their world. You know, there's kids now who are like 8 years old, 10 years old who have cell phones. That's the world. That's the world that they're growing up in. So it's pointless crying about it. We've just got to adapt to it. But what we've got to remember is that these kids are not, they're under all this pressure and all this outside noise. The biggest safe place is that we're giving sport as a vehicle where they can develop soft skills that they haven't got anymore, because they're always through their phones, they're talking to people, they're losing the interperson skills, they're losing the leadership skills, they're losing the analytical skills. Well, soccer's a great way to develop that, because if we're asking the questions of the players, we're not putting the emphasis too much on winning. For me, the winning should be, you know, how many, Adrian, how many opportunities did you recognize to intercept the ball today? And if you've done that X amount of times, like, that's a win.
Absolutely.
How many times did you play back to the goalkeeper? And even if you're building from the back and it got intercepted and it went in the back of the net, great, because that's a learn opportunity. We've got to give them those choices. Otherwise, if we remove that choice from them, they'll never learn. They've never experienced it. And by leading with the players with the question, and a lot of stuff we do as well, is we do, and I'd recommend anybody listening to this, they've got to do it. Halftime team talks led by the players. How crazy would that be? Because it's always the coach yelling and telling the kid what went wrong and what should happen. How much of that information are they really going to remember? Well, who just played the game? Why not set the players a challenge and say, hey, get into your groups, maybe defenders, midfielders, attackers, or whatever, get into positions, have a discussion amongst yourselves. What did you notice? What do you think we could do differently next time? How can we change this? Let the kids lead the discussion. And we're going to develop all these leadership skills that are so much more important than winning on its own. And what will actually happen is they'll end up getting so much success and we'll develop them into better people. And if we get better people, we're going to get better players. There's no question of that.
Absolutely. And you really touch on a great point. And something I was thinking of as you were talking about it is I don't think many people really understand, because, you know, a lot of parents are focused, you know, on their child, which is fine. You know, I mean, that's what's important to you. But for in the grassroots program, or for most soccer players, the grassroots, that's the biggest ambition that they have. You know, is to play grassroots. I mean, there are some people that, you know, play, or a lot of players out there that, you know, may not have any urge to play at the high school level. They just want to go and have fun, play with their friends, you know, and maybe those are, you know, some of the ones that may play in an adult league, you know, fun league somewhere here and there. But, you know, the majority of these kids are not going to make soccer a vital part of their life going forward. And you brought up the point about the clubs bragging about their number of state championships that they won, which is fine.
But also at the same time,
I would love to see clubs that said, hey, you know, here's Jimmy. Jimmy just graduated from college with a 4-year degree in this, and he's going on to do this, this, and this. And he attributes his time playing soccer as giving him the tools that he needs to succeed as far as he's come.
That would be worldy. That's the definition for success. 100%.
You know, it amazes me. I wish that we could celebrate those types, you know, those types of victories and because, you know, I mean, they're not going to, some don't have the ambition to play. Now, you know, my daughter, you know, she's actually signing her national letter of intent tomorrow to play soccer at a D2 college. And that's something that she's been, you know, striving for and working towards. And, you know, trying to find her own way through the various challenges that we've had from a high school and club level. And one thing that I'm incorporating with her that I'd like her to get involved with, and maybe you can speak a little bit more about this, I'd like to see her get into coaching. I'd like to, because the game has given her so much, I would love to see her give back to the game in some sort of way. It may not be now. It may be a few years down the road. But I'm so jealous that the restructuring of these coaching courses and right. and the pathway. I have a U.S. Soccer Federation D license, and I'm just jealous at having the 4v4, the 7v7, 9v9 grassroots. I mean, if I would have had that back then, I just think that would have been tremendous.
I completely agree, and congrats on your daughter, because that's awesome.
Thank you.
I think there's two things here, because the first thing I'm thinking of is, to answer that, is that we want to get the kids playing, and we want to get the kids sharing that knowledge, because peer-to-peer learning is so, so powerful. So, as you mentioned, giving back. How many of us feel that we're a better, and I'll ask this question to listeners, do you feel you're a better player now that you're a coach? And I'm even asking you, because the answer is going to be yes, because you know more about the game.
Absolutely.
And would better players, if they've had that coaching experience, would they be better players? Well, yes. You know, so if we've got players on the field who are coaches, they're going to be so much more better at what they're doing. So I would encourage anybody who's got high school players as early as they can, based on the age limits that we have, obviously, on the courses when you can enroll, I would encourage them to get onto their children about registering and doing grassroots coaching courses, because they're going to become a better player for it. You know, and that's where the emphasis is going, because they're the decision makers. So if we've got coaches on the field who are playing the game, we're going to do pretty well. And I think just for their life skills, the fact that they can become a referee, or in this case, become a coach, that's awesome, because it's an extra earning potential for them. They've always got that to fall back on, you know, especially if they're going to college and they want something else, and they can give back to the community and share knowledge. And how powerful would that be? Your daughter, D2, going to help the local girls, U12 team or U10, whatever. And she's passing on knowledge, and she's a female role model. And she's also, by passing on the knowledge, consolidating her own knowledge. And she's figuring out and making sense of what she's doing. She's going to be a better player for it, a better human being for it. It's fantastic. And I think the other thing to take here is that the courses now, because they're geared around the age specialisms, and the key is getting the kids playing. We don't want kids studying lines. We don't want kids not touching the ball. How much ball rolling time is there in the session? If you're a grassroots coach and you've got 60 minutes, you've got an hour session, and you've spent 10 or 15 minutes doing your warm-up, right? That's gone. Probably took you 5 minutes to explain the thing, probably, which is horrible. So now, you know, it's probably took you another couple of minutes for water breaks. Then you've had to explain again. Then you've had to stop it because you can't help yourself. When we look at a 60-minute session, the kids are probably only playing for 10 minutes. Well, that's wrong. Whereas what we're now saying is, how can we get the kids playing more? And the biggest thing with the play, practice, play, which I love, is that there's always that hunger that the kids are racing to get to your practice, because they know they're starting with a game. So the kids know that when they come in, and this is an arrival activity, it's an activation activity. When they come into your practice and they know they're going straight into 1v1s, and then as the kids are coming out the cars in dribs and drabs, now they might be in a 2v1 or a 1v2, or then a 2v2, then a 3. All of a sudden, you've got your full roster. You might have 3v3 games going on. You've got a roster of 12. Great. And they're in play one. They're playing. And then you're bringing them in. Then you're asking them questions, but you're not looking for the answer. You're giving them a problem to solve. You're not giving them an answer. You're letting them go and play. It's great because the kids are playing. And then you're bringing them back in, and you're saying, hey, what could you do? What did you notice? Okay, brilliant. Here's a challenge. I want you to try it. Boom, boom, boom. Yep, off you go. Then you're bringing them in again. They've had a break. They're going into another activity. You're exploring the learning even more. You're setting them challenges. And then you're throwing them into an extension of that, which is the real game. There's a half time within that, within play two. So there's a half time, which we never ever prepare for. When do we prepare for half times in practices? Only when on game day. So they never get an opportunity to prepare for the second half until the actual day of. So you're actually embedding that now within your training week. I mean, it's incredible. And at the end of it, the kids are like, wow, I've just played games all practice. But that's fine. The other issue we've got, which hopefully will come out in this podcast, is what do the parents think of this?
Right, yeah, absolutely. There's got to be some parent buy-in.
Right. Well, parents are going to love it. There's going to be other parents that are going to be like, no. I want the coach telling my kid what to do. That's what coaching really is. And they play too many games. They're not doing enough drills. And why aren't they doing, you know? So there's going to be some parents that will be watching this thinking, oh, all the coach does is just let them scrimmage. Well, what was that great quote that the kids always used to ask us when we coached them? And you always knew it was getting pouring. Mm-hmm. Coach, when are we going into a scrimmage?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely. That was the word out of their mouths all the time. When are we going to scrimmage?
Yeah. When are we going to play a game? Come on. When are we going to play? Because I want to play. Whereas we're not getting that now. But there's still going to be parents who are going to be looking at this thinking, oh, all Adrian does is he just lets the kids play as if it's a crime. But he's like, he just lets them play. He's not, that isn't real coaching. Well, now this is the skill of the coach. And we talk about this on the courses. How do we engage more with the parents? We've got to communicate to them and involve them in the process of what we're doing and why. The biggest thing is why. Because if we're sharing with them, hey, I'm doing this because of this, we share with them our session plans, you share with them the objectives that you want for the session, what are the training goals? And the biggest emphasis I've got is the language, the key words. What are the language that we're using? And because often the language that we use can sometimes be jargon, or it can be the new buzzword. You know, I'm hearing coaches throw out rondos every 2 seconds. They probably don't know what rondo means. Definitely wasn't a rondo. They actually don't know what the word rondo means. And I'll say to them, what does rondo mean then? You use that. Well, what does it mean? I don't know. And it's a musical term. It means a rehearsal of a play, Spanish. And if you look at that and you're looking at the patterns and so on, that's a topic for another day. But they're using, you know, oh, half space, get into the half space. And the kid at under nine is thinking, what the hell's a half space? You know, but all this is going on. I think, you know, if you're using keywords and the substance behind it and relevance, that's great. You know, they need to understand why. But the key is having a crystal clear, simple communication coaching language within a club. And that coaching language has to be consistent across the age groups. So the things that are changing are, you know, a famous quote in the UK was, the only thing that changes is the size of the shirt, but the message remains the same. I know there's going to be a lot of things that change other than the size of the shirt. Obviously, they're getting bigger, stronger, faster, going through peak height velocity, maturity, etc. They're going through different peaks and troughs of learning. But the main emphasis of that is that, you know, I work with the players for a couple of years. When I pass them on to you, we're using the same terminology. Because if you describe something that's different to what I've been working on, the kids are going to get confused. So the kids are always having to adapt to the next coach. And often in a lot of grassroots clubs, the message is silos. Each little team runs in their own little silo, so it's not unified. That's another thing that we're trying to tackle. How can it be real simple, real crystal clear, and share that with the parents? So that when the parents are looking out on what they're doing, they're seeing the enjoyment on the kids' faces. They're seeing the kids wanting to sprint into the practice, but they're also seeing, oh, I get it now. I actually get it. So that's what we want.
Now, before we wrap up our podcast, if you could just tie it into one nice, neat little bow, just letting our grassroots coaches know why they should go through the U.S. Soccer grassroots coaching courses, what would it be?
I would say that the biggest reason they should do any courses is because they're going to stretch and challenge what they think they know. So if you're really passionate about coaching and you're really passionate about developing children and developing your club and developing yourself, I'd encourage you to get on the course because you're going to expand what your knowledge base is. You're going to find out things that you didn't even consider. You're going to consider new what-ifs, and you're going to effectively meet, hopefully, like-minded people who are going to stretch and challenge you. And that'll be a great skill set to take back into your club to have immediate impact on the community that you're working in. That's the key. You know, if you want to learn and you value learning, then get yourself on the next course, because you're not going to go away thinking, oh, I didn't take anything away from today. You're going to take a lot away, if anything, too much. And the challenge will be, how do you consolidate all that and make sense of it?
Excellent. Now, if anybody wants to find out more about the U.S. Soccer coaching courses and even find you online, you're very active on Twitter and have a lot of great content there. Where can they find you and where can they find the courses?
So courses can be found, as I mentioned before, learning.ussoccer.com. There's the what used to be called the Digital Coaching Center. It's now called the U.S. Soccer Learning Center. They can find that online. They can create a profile. It'll also have a record of their upcoming or completed courses that they've done with the Federation. And it'll also allow them to register on other courses. And they can find me on Twitter. It's at Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D underscore Jones. And that's on Twitter. More than welcome to reach out to me. I'm happy to help anyone in any way I can, because, you know, we're all in the same game.
Absolutely. And of course, they've got at the Learning Center, they've got the free introduction to grassroots coaching. You said it was about 20 minutes. I think it's valuable even just to go take that, just to kind of get your feet wet even about that. Would you agree?
100%. It's actually the best course I find. I mean, it's one of my favorite courses. Everyone that I've ever recommended to go on it, they've always said that they've learned so much. And I would even encourage, if you have any parent managers on your teams, get them to do the grassroots courses. We had one of our parent managers actually do it. Fantastic mum, Christy Alia. She ended up enrolling on did the introduction to grassroots coaching. She loves it so much. She then did the 77, which is where her child is. Her child's a U9 boy. And she loved it. And I would encourage parents on your teams to take these courses, because they're free. They're free, or $25 for 2 hours online.
Yep.
And just imagine how much more, you know, knowledge base you're sharing with the parents. You're engaging with them. Some coaches might be like, oh, I don't want them to have the same license as me, because that might make them think that they can coach the game and that they know more. Don't worry about that. Don't be fearful of that. Actually, embrace that people can have questions and knowledge and comments, and they can bring that to you, because it's going to keep the conversation going. And that's what we want. We want conversations.
Yep. Continue the conversation. That allows us to continue to grow the game.
You nailed it.
All right, Gerard, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today and providing some valuable insight to our grassroots coaches here in the state of West Virginia. I appreciate it.
No, appreciate it. Thank you. Apologies for any background noise, if there was any.
Oh, no worries at all. No worries at all.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I'd love to do this again and talk further. I absolutely love it.
We certainly will get you on the show again. Thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the West Virginia Soccer Association Digital Network. Now that you've heard our show, make sure you give our podcast a 5-star rating and follow us wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode, so we hope to see you next week. Take care.